Good afternoon. Meeting will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the April 3rd meeting before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any questions, corrections, or additions to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have one item of business tonight. That is the Omnibus Health and Human Services Bill. Representative Dean moves that Senate File 800 be referred to the General Register, and then Representative Dean moves that the language of House File 945 be inserted in place of the Senate language. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. All right. Just a procedural motion. Okay, members, we have the bill before us. Representative Dean, do you want to present the bill or take the amendments?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to start off. I'd like to move the A27-2 author's amendment. What this amendment does is it adds House File 2573, which is telemedicine abortion reporting, which was passed in last year's bill. Is it identical to that, from my understanding? Also, there are three technical changes, primarily to the spreadsheet on 3.15 to 16, clarifying duties of the Department of Health and Human Services regarding technical assistance, 3.17 to 29, modifying terminology, clarifying language, 4.1 to 4.2, clarifying the effective date for an amendment, 4.3 to 5.26, making changes to the appropriations article to conform with the spreadsheet and the fiscal notes. And that is the author's amendment.
Okay, members, I think that the same amendment is in your packet as the S0800A1 amendment. So, Representative Dean, let's say you move that amendment, but why don't I make sure that you've got a copy of it and make sure it is, in fact, the amendment identical to the one that you think it is.
Yeah, so I moved the S0800A1.
Okay, discussion to the A1 amendment. Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, we did have a brief explanation, but I see that there are a number of changes in the back of the amendment. Fiscal changes, are any of those of a substantive nature? And by the way, I did talk to the chair today because last night I asked for a roll call on an amendment, and a big reason for that was I felt we needed some explanation as to what that amendment contained, and I was, quite frankly, trying to slow things down a little bit so people could take a look at that amendment last night. You know, there's kind of two categories of author's amendments. There's author's amendments that are pretty much technical and they just go on automatically, but when we're here in committee like this and there's a lot of numerical changes, it's important to understand if any of those are of a substantive nature, hence the roll call last night. So I see you've got the Mr. Berg with you. Is there anything of substantive with these numbers that we should be aware of tonight?
And members, I certainly want to give every member all the time they feel they need to understand any amendments. So if people have concerns or issues, by all means, please get recognized. Mr. Berg, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Human Services Committee. Representative Carlson, the numerical changes you see involve a number of mostly technical changes to the numbers in the bill. As Representative Dean mentioned, there is one new item, which is the abortion reporting requirement at the Department of Health. That in and of itself required some balancing because the target didn't go up. It just is money that was moved out of DHS. There was a rider that was misplaced in the bill in the Human Services Finance Committee, which was moved to another subdivision and the money corrected with it. There was a fiscal note that came in where the numbers had to be adjusted. And there were, I believe, two items where the House is taking parts of the governor's budget, and we finally got the tracking from the governor's budget that's a little different than the original tracking. And those changes and the making it balance are the sum of what happened in the financing.
Representative Paulson.
That's fine. I don't have any further questions then.
Representative Lieberman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Mr. Berg, a couple of things that you said that I'd like a little more explanation on. One was on this abortion provision. I think I understood you to say that there's a cost to it. And I just want to, maybe I should first just see if my understanding is clear with Representative Bean. This was not heard this year, I don't think. Am I correct? And now it sounds like it has a fiscal piece to it as well. Am I right?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that is correct. It was included in last term's omnibus bill. It was not heard this year.
Representative Liebling, I tell you, I have heard that there's going to be a hearing on it, I think, in the next couple of days before this bill goes to the floor in the relevant committee. But I stand with Representative Dean in terms of apparently it has not had a hearing yet.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And sometimes we think, we keep hearing the same stuff year after year. Certainly I feel that way about the abortion bills. We keep hearing year after year no matter what, and they're the same bills, even though Supreme Court's spoken on some of that stuff, and we still keep hearing the same bills. But nevertheless, I think it's we are a new legislature, and I think that we do have to we ought to be giving hearings to bills, not just sticking them in omnibus bills. So that would be good, I guess, if we're going to actually have a hearing on this bill. But does it have a fiscal piece then? I guess I could ask Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, there is a $71,000 cost that appears on page 25, line 1851. And identical to last year when this happened, there is statutory abortion reporting now. This changes it slightly. And the $71,000 actually pays for programming to update the computer program they use to do that.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lublin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the second piece I wanted Mr. Burke to comment on a little more. I heard you say that there was a new fiscal note that came in and adjustments had to be made because of that. Could you be a bit more specific and tell us what bill and where it is in the amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the bill was House Bill 2115. It was the MCO outcomes bill. And there is now, if I give me a moment, the cost in the fiscal note of that is reflected in the bill, and the savings that were reflected are now part of the health demonstration pilot projects line, and that is on the plus file 2115 appears starting on line 830 on page 22 of the spreadsheet.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could, thank you. So, Mr. Berg, was this the, MCO Outcomes Program, was this the, what we would call the direct contracting piece, or was this the the thing about the hospital reporting systems?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, it was the hospital reporting system item, Representative Albright's bill.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, if I could. So that was, as I recall, that was supposed to save some money, am I right? And then, so could you maybe even just tell us, Mr. Berg, what the change was there?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, again, it did reflect the previous spreadsheet coming out of Human Services Finance, did reflect savings. We got the fiscal note. The costs are reflected on lines 832 to 835, And then the savings that were not in the fiscal note are now part of the healthcare delivery systems pilot project item, which begins on line 838, just below it.
Okay, so
Representative Woodling.
So, Mr. Chair, I just want members to understand, you know, what are we talking about here? I think this is pretty important because it really highlights something about this bill that is really problematic, and that is that some of the numbers are just plain old made up. This bill is based on made up numbers. So if I'm kind of interpreting, and Mr. Berg can tell me if I, or Representative Dean can tell me if I'm misstating this. So what was in the bill as a $10 million savings came out to have a cost when the fiscal note came out. And so that cost is now reflected in the spreadsheet. And so we've got that on these lines, 833 and on there. So,
Representative Liebling, is this something that's in the A1 amendment?
Well, yes, it is, Mr. Chair. This is about the A1 amendment. This is a change that's being made in the A1 amendment.
Okay.
And so I'm just, you know, if I'm understanding this, so that money, that savings, that is now a cost. So it's about a $1.5 million cost, what used to be reflected as a $10 million savings. So now what this amendment is doing is it's just saying, oh, well, we'll just save $10 million more dollars, if that's what it is. I think it is about $10 million more dollars. So we'll just say that in this pilot project we're doing, we're going to save that $10 million more. Because it turns out that the thing that was supposed to save $10 million actually costs $1.5 million. So that's what we're doing when we pass this amendment, is just saying, oh, okay, we're just going to move this $10 million savings and we're just going to say we're going to save it on another line. But it's no more real there than it was when it was in this other line that we're moving it out of. So that's what I'm understanding this to be, because if I'm wrong, please correct me.
Okay. Other discussion? Now, Representative Dean or Mr. Berg? Well, I've got Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to make sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, if you can let us know where the abortion language will be heard in addition to here. As I look at it, it looks like it would need to go to civil law, maybe COPS.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, we are scheduled, I believe, on Thursday morning in civil law.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then in the language here, I just want to flag a couple of things. On the very first page of the amendment, you're inserting language here into the bill that, again, I think eliminates what we think of as presumptive eligibility. And so enrollees in Minnesota Care Medical Assistance, especially if they don't have a residence, a permanent residence, could lose their coverage. And then we'll have to chase them again, causing that churn that is expensive for the Department of Human Services and for the people that are enrolled. So we talked about that in committee. I want to flag that again. And then you change some language in the bill. It looks like you're deleting the word racial and you're deleting the word ethnic and inserting cultural. And I'm just wondering if you can explain to us why you're doing that.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, if you could direct me to the page and line number, that would be helpful.
So I'm looking at the amendment. It's the first page of the amendment, and then in the bill, page 45, lines 21 and 22.
Okay.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. Mr. Chun informs me that that was to match up with other language to be consistent with other portions of the bill for the purposes of a fiscal note in particular, not trying to change any policy direction around the words that kind of jumped out at me as well. So that's why.
All right, Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, I think you and I will have to talk about that a little bit more before we get to the floor to understand how that changes the fiscal note.
Okay.
So I'm going to put you on the spot there for now. All right, thank you.
Okay, other discussion to the A1 amendment. Representative Dean, anything else you want to say about the A1 amendment?
Nope.
Yeah, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, could you just explain on line 3.20 down to 3.24 what, sorry if I missed this, but what is that doing? Is that just maybe it's just a technical change?
Representative Dean.
Yep. Yes, Mr. Yeah, that's from the governor's language from the Child Protection Bill, inserting that from just to get the language in our bill correct.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. So I'm just understanding from that that it was just something that was had been overlooked and it's just a technical change, essentially, not anything substantive?
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Other discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Okay, members, next, I'm going to offer the A2 amendment. The A2 amendment is an amendment that was brought to me by MICA, the County Association, and what this is that there is language that dollars that the counties paid for patients from those counties that were in mental health facilities like the Anoka Regional Treatment Center, for example, are now going to be put into a pool, a portion of the dollars, out of which various mental health grants are going to be made. And I guess there's various discussions about what agreements there may have been regarding the approval process for these grants, but this would basically add in that the counties, before a grant was made out of this fund, that there would have to be a letter of support from the local mental health authority, as well as a little bit of other language regarding the grants, such as what is on lines 8 and 9 of the amendment. Is anyone, I can bring someone forward to testify if people have more questions, but it's basically making sure that counties have more input into this money that they've been paying for the grants. Any discussion of the A2 amendment? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how much money are we talking about here that is being shifted around?
I think it's in the order of a few million dollars, but Representative Dean, can you confirm that? Or Representative Cornish, was your question to this?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'll follow.
All right. Okay. Representative Dean?
Mr. Chair, I understand it's a one-time $4 million grant.
Okay. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I assume that it's not new money, but it's money that was previously spent on mental health issues. So is it going to be for the same or similar kinds of programming, or is this in an attempt to do things differently and save money? I'm just trying to figure out what the goal of this grant that we're giving local units, local community authorities, us saying what we're going to do differently.
Representative Dean?
Oh,
I guess I'm recalling you because the grants are already in the bill. This just sort of revises some of the qualifications for the grants. Representative Dean?
Yeah, from what I understand, it would just change the relationship with the county, and if some of those folks are here, that perhaps they could respond to that.
Representative Holstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to understand what the grants are so that I can evaluate whether it's appropriate for the county folks to be weighing in on what it is, right? I mean, if I don't know what the grant is for, I'm not sure they're the proper person to weigh in. I just want to make sure we have the proper people weighing in. That's all.
Well, maybe we can ask someone from the counties come forward if you got that question.
Okay.
I know we've got some representatives from the county here. Hello, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. If you could state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, my name is Rochelle Wetzel. I'm the Health and Human Services Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. The goal with these mental health grants is to work on building the continuum of care. As the Governor's Task Force on Mental Health met this last year, one of the recommendations that came from the Governor's Task Force was to take additional funding that is being paid in currently by counties from the cost shifts to AMRTC and CBHHs and move them into funding. This is a one-time grant, so it doesn't specifically address those dollars, but counties as a mental health authority work very intimately in what this looks like as building the continuum of care. This isn't requiring that counties requiring counties to choose. It offers a letter of support. Counties as the mental health authority offer letters of support for projects on a number of different grant items, and this is requiring that when a grant application is being considered that the local mental health authority offers a letter of support for whatever those programs are. They're not necessarily county programs.
Representatives from.
Thank you, Mr. And I just, so is it usually just one county that's doing the program, or are these usually joint collaborations
with
multiple
counties?
Excuse me, sorry, ma'am. It could be a joint collaboration with multiple counties.
Other questions, Representative Lublin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to ask, I think this was a bill that originated, did not originate with the counties, I think, but it, so I just want to make sure that there's no opposition to making this change. I mean, it sounds perfectly fine, but, you know, I know there are other stakeholders. As I recall this was where, when the counties have to pay the share of money for somebody who's in the regional treatment center, and that money that the county is just paying in, and it right now is just going into the general fund, that money is captured and then used for these grants to try to actually have some facilities to step down people who are coming out of the regional treatment center, right? That's kind of, this is what this is. And I mean, it sounded like a really promising, great idea, but you're not aware that any of the other stakeholders are opposed to this change.
Ms. Westland?
Thank you, Representative. And as you know, we've been working with the stakeholders, and there's continuing to be conversation around that. They're not opposed to this language, but we want to make sure that we get this in the right order. And so we're still working with hospital associations that have been the major carriers of this bill, as well as with NAMI and DHS.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, as you know, that there is cost differences, and you know, when those facilities have to absorb a shift, there will be some further discussions for the conference committee and worked out. So this is new to me today for this bill, so that we would certainly have to work with the stakeholders through the conference committee for me to be more comfortable with how this works itself out. So,
okay. Other discussion of the A2 amendment?
Yeah.
Well, Representative Cornish, yes.
Representative Dean, since this is the second amendment, I was wondering if you could put a couple of gun bills on there for me?
There's no deadline for Ways and Means, Representative Cornish, so...
I thought this was a little levity in it. But I would like to talk about that yellow line bill.
I know you would.
Those are funny.
Let's see. No further discussion on the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Are there any other amendments? Representative Cornish. No. All right. All right. Discussion to the bill as amended. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question about the interrelationship of Representative Anderson's bill and Representative Dean's bill. The MSOP program, the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, is in this proposal, and I understand that there isn't the recommendations from the governor's budget to deal with safe staffing levels in this bill and additional training of workers and additional staff. And so my question is, does Representative Anderson's cut bill for state government impact the workers already impacted at the Minnesota Security Hospital, the MSOP program, which are already in a dangerous setting and situation?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, the one of the primary differences between the governor's proposal and our proposal is staffing. The governor really, you know, one of his big initiatives is to increase headcount for not just MSOP, but also the security hospital and other places with many labor groups, with AFSCME, MAPE, other labor groups that would be included within that. We have looked at increasing staff ratio, and in our deficiency bill that we passed in the last term, one of the areas that we targeted was trying to increase caseworkers and frontline folks at those facilities. However, when we did that, when we deployed those dollars, we were disappointed when those dollars were redirected towards other areas, middle management overtime, or in fact uses to pay back other funds. So one of the areas that we are very interested in is making sure that dollars that are directed towards staff actually show up as people getting hired for frontline staff. So when you say that we are not funding the governor's request, I would certainly agree with that. But when you say that we are not making those decisions to add frontline people, I think that that needs to be a facility decision and one that we need to have, we need to pay close attention to.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, I didn't say you weren't funding frontline staff. My question was, does the cuts that are in Representative Anderson's bill that kind of superimposes over other agencies affect MSOP and St. Peter, because the Department of Corrections is exempted from those, according to the testimony we heard on her bill, and I want to know if you have also exempted the places where we keep the most dangerous sex offenders and the places where we keep some of the most dangerous folks here in Minnesota.
Representative Dean, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hillstrom, as I mentioned to you yesterday, that includes mental health. And if you look at the review of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program, part of their treatment is therapeutic, so that would fall under the mental health provision as an exemption to the requirements that I have in my bill.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. So that's the entire MSOP program and the entire St. Peter program, or just particular pieces of it?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom, it was page 48, so you can look at that in the bill. I'll review it more closely so I have a more definitive answer for you later on. But thank you.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that they're exempted, so I want to make sure I don't have to offer an amendment on the floor. That's the reason I'm asking.
Other discussion? Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Chair Dean, I just want to ask you a few questions about the savings in the bill. It is the area of, I mean, there's a number of things in the bill that I'm concerned about, but this is the area where I think it's obvious that we have, I think, issues with the bill. So, you know, before we passed this legislation, you know, we've already sent $800 million out in the arena of healthcare to the health plans. And now we have a budget bill here that's got about $599 million worth of cuts. And most of the savings in the bill are either payment shifts. The payment shift to the MCO, the managed care health plan payment shift that everybody is accepting, right? And I understand, you know, DHS is going to look the other way and the health plans are going to look the other way, but I don't understand why, when we have a stably balanced budget, we need to do a payment shift in order to save money. And the same thing is happening with MA and inflation in this budget, that we're capturing inflation as a savings in medical assistance. We talked about this in the committee at length, about whether or not that would impact or how that would impact medical assistance down the line. I think our obligation to the people that are enrolled in medical assistance stays the same. But we're vacuuming out some money in inflation in the forecast. That's an unusual thing. That seems like another gimmick to me, a way for us to demonstrate some savings in the bill. And then there are a couple of ideas that could be promising for us in terms of reform and savings, but they don't have a fiscal note yet. Unless, Mr. Chair, have we received fiscal notes on those provisions yet? There are a couple of different ideas in this bill. And when we were in Health and Human Services Finance and we voted for this bill, we didn't have fiscal notes yet for those provisions.
You know, Representative Murphy, I inquired this morning about fiscal notes, particularly on the pilot projects, and I guess what I was told is that I think they're expecting to come in at maybe more than was anticipated in this bill, but I have not personally seen them yet.
You haven't?
No, I have not personally seen them.
And do you have any idea when you might?
I guess I'd have to ask Representative Dean that question.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'll come back to you in a minute. So, Representative Dean, with regard to the savings in the bill, they're backed up by provider cuts, as I understand it. So if the ideas in the bill don't save the money that you are suggesting, then they're backed up by provider cuts of $204 million, but we don't specify in the bill how those cuts happen. So can you just help us understand what the expectation would be for the Department of Human Services and for the providers if the savings that are in this bill aren't realized and we have to cut that deeply, the providers?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. Let's just put it out on the table right now, just how we're going to achieve some of the savings. Because we kind of addressed this in the last term, and we're trying it again this time. We would like to pull out serious dollars that are currently being wasted in the system by paying for people who do not qualify for programs because they are ineligible due to income, due to where they live, or due to whether or not they're alive. We cannot afford to waste that money. And the last time we heard that this was unicorn dust or whatever. Then after that, we had a legislative auditor's report that showed that across 40% of our programs, we had up to a $271 million loss for paying for people that don't qualify for programs. We then asked the department to do a periodic data match to find out if people were indeed eligible and to bring them back through. And what we found is that they have not gotten around to that yet, but they are going to anticipate that when they do, we will find out on a fiscal note from MMB that says that we're currently paying for over $50 million worth of coverage for people that shouldn't get it, and we have been doing that. The legislative auditor's report again underlined and magnified actually the amount of money that we are losing by paying for people who don't qualify for programs. So there will be discussion about whether or not we can realize savings. I think we have shown that we can realize those savings, but we have to try. The department has to do it in order for us to realize those savings. So we believe that the department needs to do this. They need to start with a periodic data match. We also have something called I'm Not a Robot in the bill that says if you're on a public program and you sign up with Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever the HMO is, that the HMO has to reach out and say, are you alive? Do you live in Minnesota? Do you qualify for another program? Check a box, sign your signature, whatever, send it back. And we need to know that because if not, we're just paying capitated checks out to the HMOs for people who might not even live in the state. My goodness, why aren't we doing that already? So these are some sort of basic things that I believe we already should be doing, that we're not doing, that we can do, that we have the IT in order to do. But in the event that we are not able to do that, one of the things that we're going to have to do is discuss with the administration and the department about rates and how we can achieve that if we're not able to achieve the savings. I believe that there's more savings than are here so that we would not have to have those discussions about rates to back up these savings. But that would be something, I think, for the conference committee to really look at and to dig into. But I believe that we can actually come up with greater savings than these if we just decide to do it and start to move forward. So I'm very I'm very interested in not just trying to get that, but to actually go further. And then the other part of the bill, where we're looking at delivering care in a different way, that I think that there's a bipartisan interest in looking at, that Representative Liebling actually started out looking at, on direct contracting and forming interesting teams of coordinated care and capitated payments. We believe that there's a great deal of savings to be had in that area that is not only real but achievable in a shorter time frame for moving ahead. And those are the kind of things that we're going to be doing in 5 years because what we're currently doing is not sustainable.
And Mr. Chair, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Chair Dean. I appreciate that. And we've had a pretty decent discussion about what you just argued in the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. But what I want to talk just a little bit more about is if the savings aren't realized and if we have to cut $204 million in provider rates, we don't really describe that in the bill. We just give it to the Department of Human Services, which is unusual, I think, that we would not give any level of specification to the department, and I think for the providers, the hospitals, clinics, et cetera, it's got to be a question mark. So can you just share a little more about, and should we be putting more language into the bill that would actually say this is what we mean? I mean, I think that it's there means you're not 100% confident that you're going to get the savings that you want. We don't have fiscal notes for it yet, and so you've got to back it up with something that's actually measurable. So those are provider rate cuts. So what would those look like, and how would they be accomplished if we don't give the department any more direction than this?
Representative Dean.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I think the relationship between the department rates across our public programs is pretty clear, and we can and have done that in the past, and I don't believe we would like to do that. I don't think we should have to do that. I think we should be able to realize the savings that we have outlined. And that's $170 million through eligibility verification, $164 from healthcare delivery, and $150 from the MA forecast, which is we can talk about whether or not that's a good policy decision. I think it's a good policy decision so that we can make the decision on how to spend inflated money rather than just building it into the way we're told to spend it. $135 million from capitation rate. So those are the costs that we really believe that we can take out. But what I can tell you is a direct cut is to the governor's plan to put folks on Minnesota Care, which is our lowest paying payer. It's 50 cents on the dollar as a payer for as a comparison for our providers. So if we're looking at Greater Minnesota and access to critical care hospitals, that is a rate cut that I know that we cannot afford moving forward. And that's not a maybe, that's a when. That's, I think, the other thing that we need to discuss if we're going to have that discussion about rate cuts.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy,
as no one, we're getting to the hard point in our discussion because then we start talking about what the governor's doing. Do you think that the provider cuts that could happen in the bill, if we don't realize the savings in the proposals, would lead to a reduction in access to care?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, I think we'd have to look at how we did that, and we want to do that in such a way that we would, of course, provide the most amount of care for the most amount of folks, and that's what the department does for a living. We would certainly not want to do that, but again, that would be something that we would have to discuss and work out.
So, Mr. Chair, members, the Center for Medicaid issued a rule a year ago that talks about access, and if there are actions taken by states that limit access, we can incur a penalty. I think that Representative Dean got a cut target. It's not the biggest cut target I've ever seen, but it's a cut target. And in the bill are some ideas, and attached to those ideas are some hopeful savings, but we don't know that they're real yet. And if they're not real, then we're going to cut providers across the state of Minnesota by $204 million, but we're not going to tell them how. And so, Mr. Chair, for you, I just want to know if it is your usual practice to let a bill with this much question in it out of your committee and to the floor for debate. I mean, we are almost out of the House of Representatives at this point with this legislation, and it does not seem balanced to me. It has lots of questions. We don't have fiscal notes to verify the savings in the bill. I know Representative Dean is trying. I think there are some good ideas in here. But we're going to take this up on Friday, and you're going to ask members of the House of Representatives to vote for this and send it to conference committee, and it's filled with holes. It's not balanced, and it just seems that that doesn't meet the standards of this committee. And so I want to know if that's your usual custom. This is my first time here. So.
Well, Representative Murphy, I think that it is balanced. You talk about the reimbursement, for example, and the cuts that Representative Dean is talking about that will be made if, in fact, the savings don't become available. That's how that is balanced.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
I think if you look at the language of the bill, it says these provider cuts will be made at this amount, but it doesn't say how. And so I don't think that we can actually call that a real savings either. So I do think that this bill is, it's not balanced right now. I think it's got some structural problems. I don't think it's been out of the committee yet. I don't think it's ready for prime time on the floor of the House of Representatives unless you have some guarantee that you're going to get the fiscal notes before we take this up on Friday, which is just a couple of days away.
Well, Representative Murphy, again, there is language in the bill that says if the material, if these savings don't materialize, there's another source for getting those savings, and that is written into the language of the bill.
Mr. Chair, it is written into the language of the bill, but it doesn't say how. So at least right now we're telling Minnesota providers across the state of Minnesota that they should watch out for a $204 million cut.
Okay, well, I think, Representative Murphy, it is say how. It is delegated to the department, as I understand it, to see that those savings are realized.
That's all.
All right. Other discussion. Representative Liebling, or excuse me, Representative Carlson, you're next on the list.
Mr. Chairman, some of what I was interested in saying or following up was just covered, but maybe I've got a couple of questions of the author in terms of just how solid these numbers are. Representative Dean, two words you used, which aren't generally words that we use when we're talking about balancing the budget with a complex bill like this, one of the largest that goes through the legislature, you said something like, well, we'll have to have a discussion. I'm not sure what you mean by that, so that's my first question. What do you mean by if these numbers don't turn out to be solid? What kind of discussion are we talking about? Because once this bill is passed into law, after you go through conference committee, we adjourn sine die. Or adjourn until, not sine die, but adjourn until next January. So where and how would these discussions take place, and how would you make corrections if needed be?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, the department is directed to make these reductions within their rates. We've got, as you can see from the bill, literally billions of dollars that we are paying out across our public programs within the contracts that they have associated across the state, and it would be their job to make those reductions. I don't believe that we are going to have to do that unless we decide that we're not going to. I think unless the department decides that it doesn't want to find out whether or not people are eligible for programs. And when I talk to middle-class Minnesotans who are paying $2,000 a month out of their checkbooks for health care, trying to get by you know, dipping into their retirement, dipping into their home equity just to pay their health insurance bills. We have people that are on public programs with zero premium, zero deductible, and zero copay who are, you know, not either not eligible for programs because the department is not checking. That's unacceptable to us, and I think that, that your constituents as well, Representative Carlson, wouldn't accept that.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't asking for, I know the language in the bill. That wasn't what I was asking about. Your testimony as the author of presentation, you said basically if there were problems, if things didn't work, you'd have to have a discussion. And that's what I was focusing on. I was trying to figure out what kind of a discussion you meant, being that we're going to be in a few weeks in the interim. And if the department can't accomplish some of the direction that you give in the bill and so on, discussion with whom? And how do you take action if action is needed during that period of time? I'm just picking up on your word. I didn't need to get a lot of rhetoric about a lot of the issues that people are dealing with. I think we're all familiar with those.
Well, it's not just rhetoric for people, Representative Carlson. It's real life. And the discussion is why
Mr.
the heck...
Chairman, I'm acknowledging that, but I'm trying to get
no,
to the point of what you mean by discussion.
Carlson, the discussion, Representative Carlson, is why is it that you think that we shouldn't have to verify whether or not people are qualifying for programs? We asked the department last time to check to see if people are qualified for programs. They now say $50 million we are paying, and what they're saying that we're paying... that they haven't gotten around to checking yet. So that's the discussion I'm talking about, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman,
I think that's the discussion we should have.
Representative Carlson.
It sounded to me, Mr. Chairman, like you were talking about there would be some sort of action or discussion. I understand the direction that you're trying to give, but the other word you need not respond that you used in your presentation as well as I believe. And... you know, we're dealing with establishing laws and putting forth appropriations, and I think we have to have something more solid than simply, if it doesn't work, we're going to have a discussion, whatever that means, and I'm not sure. You want to go off in a little different direction. I'm not arguing the point. If people are getting benefits that they're not supposed to get, I don't think we have an argument there. But you're attaching numbers to that, and that's my point. If there are numbers attached, we have to have, quite frankly, constitutionally a balanced budget. And if the department is not able to do that, I was trying to figure out what you meant by having a follow-up discussion. That follow-up is my word, but the discussion is yours. And we have to have something more than simply, I believe. That's where things like fiscal notes come in. If we were dealing with the tax bill, seeing Representative David sitting there, we would have revenue notes. You can't just function on what I believe or we're going to have discussions. We have to have a balanced budget with solid numbers. That's my point. I'm not arguing with what you're trying to accomplish, just we're passing a law, potentially. But that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I had a couple of maybe comments and questions here. So Representative Dean, we did have a lot of discussion in the committee about this, and we know that the auditor has found more than once that we may not be properly screening people for eligibility, and I think we all are concerned about that because we all know that we're not even meeting the needs that are there. I mean, Republican members brought about $2 billion upwards, above $2 billion worth of bills to the committee, and a lot of those needs weren't able to be funded. So we know the needs are out there, and none of us want to be paying for anything we don't have to be and shouldn't be. And so I think we're all very much in agreement with that. But I'm looking at the line in the spreadsheet for this eligibility. And I first of all, I do want to say that I think it's a little bit unfair to characterize the Department of Human Services as not wanting to do this. I think that it's they do want to do this. They just have had some challenges in getting it done for some reasons, technical reasons that are somewhat outside of their control, having to do with checking against the federal hub for people's, I think there were some privacy issues about getting people's tax returns, and I mean, we could have them come down and talk about that, but I just think we should just, sort of just blaming them and not giving them a chance to respond to that, I think is rather unfair. But just looking at the spreadsheet, you're saving $170 million over the biennium from this activity. And so I guess I'd like to know where that number comes from, because Representative Dean, I kind of remember that maybe the auditor had said something like $47 million. I'm not sure if I remember that correctly, but maybe that was because Representative Zerwas kept referring to $47 million. But where did the number $170 million come from? When I look at these round numbers in the spreadsheet, it always makes me a little suspicious because, you know, very little comes out to that kind of a round number. And I know you're projecting and trying to estimate. So, but I, you know, how do you get to that number? Because that's a pretty big number to be saved on, you know, kicking people off who shouldn't be on.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, that's from looking at the, primarily from the analysis from the legislative auditor's reports. I believe there were two or three that we had used as guideposts for a goal for collecting the money that is currently going out primarily to HMOs for people who are not qualified. And again, in the report that found the largest just across a portion of our programs across 5 months of up to $271 million. So I believe that would actually be a realistic goal if we were to actually go after it. When I say that they don't want to do that, the department doesn't want to do that, Representative Liebling, I think it's perhaps that is unfair. I'm just saying that we instructed them to begin a periodic data match as one portion of this, and it has not yet happened. So here we are 2 years later. So I do think that we need to move things along much faster than they currently are.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dean, perhaps that experience should be a cautionary one, because, you know, in the bill when we're telling them you have to do X, Y, and Z and we expect you to do it and it will happen, you know, we have to make sure that we actually request things that actually can happen. Otherwise, we get the problem that we've gotten before. But I believe the $271 million that you just mentioned were from a previous report. I mean, that's a really familiar number, and that had to do with HMO administrative expenses, and I do believe we took care of that one. So last term, we took care of that one. So I think I'm a little suspicious about that number. But, you know, I love to save money from the administration expenses of the HMOs, which I, you know, my view that we should not use them at all for our public programs. But nevertheless, I think that number, $170 million over the biennium, is one that I don't think there's a real very solid basis for that at all. And I am pretty much a hawk on that HMO stuff. And then on the next section down here, the competitive bidding reform, could you explain where you get a $50 million savings over the biennium on that one?
Representative Dean.
Representative. I got to try to bring you to the bill, but that is also from We have 135 in capitation reform, but the bidding, what that does is it looks at how we're going out and asking for these competitive bids and having them come back with not just with the IHP, but also how we're delivering these projects. And I'm going to get you back to the bill in just a second. Also, when we're looking at how the competitive bidding can come back, I think that that's really the portion of the bill that we can really get the most amount of savings on, is from how the pieces come back together with our HMOs as they're coming together with proposals for this project.
And Representative Lieberman, if I can jump in on this whole eligibility issue, I guess just to put some numbers in perspective. I remember when we were talking about the negotiations 2 years ago, we had fiscal notes that claimed, and we had thought there'd be a lot more savings in the last biennium, but the fiscal notes we got claimed savings of, and these were general fund numbers, there were other additional savings, I think, beyond this and other funds, of $15 million in the last biennium and $120 million for this biennium. So, and as of now, we haven't realized, from what I understand, one dime of those savings so far, even though we had fiscal notes that we would have expected we'd have $135 million based on that by the end of this biennium that we're going to be budgeting for. And beyond that, that was before there was an additional legislative auditor report that came out that indicated that the eligibility problems were even greater. There was even a higher percentage of people ineligible for our public programs than there were back when they had done the previous report that the other fiscal notes were based on. And so, you know, part of the concern here is, I mean, we're dependent on the Department of Human Services to give us fiscal notes for an area that they have been, you know, frankly, been criticized by the legislative auditor on over and over and over the years. And so I think if you look at the legislative auditor and what they are saying now in terms of the percentage of people that are ineligible versus what they found even a few years ago, and if you look at the fiscal notes the department themselves gave us back 2 years ago, where they would have expected we'd have $135 million of savings by the end of this biennium, I don't really think that the $170 million is that unreasonable. And I think, if I remember right, too, part of the additional increase in the February forecast in spending were further people that further spending in the whole public health program area, a percentage of that, which also was then people that were ineligible for programs. So I guess Representative Dean's got probably more of those numbers at his fingertips than I do, but I guess just to give you a perspective on past fiscal notes and legislative auditor reports and how they do support that number, that number doesn't seem unreasonable.
Well,
Representative Lieberman.
Mr. Chair, I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding here of what it means to have savings when you do some reform in our Medicaid program, medical assistance program, because medical assistance is a forecasted program, you don't see the savings here on your spreadsheet. And so you're looking at, yeah, there were problems before, and there were things about saving administrative expenses in the HMOs. And we did some changes to hopefully tighten down. Now, we could get DHS up here to tell us what those savings were. But where you see those savings go is to the bottom line of the budget. That's your $165 billion of surplus. When you save money in Medicaid, you don't see it back on this spreadsheet. You see it in the bottom line. And so when you guys do a tax bill that spends $1.35 billion, you can't then turn around and say, let's also spend it in HHS because we saved the money. It doesn't work that way. And that's why in the last budget cycle, when Representative Gaskowski had this wonderful idea, let's have a fund, and when you save money from fraud, it will go right into that fund. That's why that fund was an empty balloon. It never had a dollar in it. I don't know if it actually survived and was passed into law, but if it had, it would have been completely unusable, because that's not how the savings show up. So you could get DHS up here and ask them, you know, what has happened from some of the reforms they've made over the years, and they have saved money. And they're always, everybody's always trying to save money in this program, and in fact, I've offered a couple of amendments this year to try to get our arms around this even more, because we all want to save money. But you can't just make up a number and say, oh yeah, competitive bidding reform, $50 million bucks, isn't that nice? $170 million for getting rid of fraud. It would be great if we could count it that way, but this is just not the way it works. I have one other one I wanted to ask Representative Dean about.
Okay, and I'll let you do that, Representative Lulu, but just to my point, we did get a letter from the department that basically they hadn't been able to start the efforts they wanted to in this area, and they weren't going to be starting until July 1st, 2018. So I understand what you're saying, that yes, if they had lots of savings, those would accrue to the bottom line, and you wouldn't necessarily see them. But we've got a letter from them already saying that they haven't been able to really get to work on it yet.
Well,
and so because of that, I think the numbers that we talked about in terms of the fiscal notes they had given us previously are reasonable numbers.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean.
If I could. And you might recall in the last budget cycle when the budget director was in front of us, in front of this committee, I said, what was the number one success? And it was competitive for fiscal reform, and it was competitive bidding to pull out hundreds of millions of dollars mm-hmm. in savings. That was when I asked the budget director the number one reform, it was pulling money out within competitive bidding. The $50 million, as Representative Zerwas's bill and Representative Benson in the Senate, looks at exactly that at the county level. I think that's a reasonable expectation that we should. And the counter-argument is, what if we don't do that? What if we don't start to pull out some of these escalations? Look at the sheet that I sent out. Just look at the escalation in state and federal funds. We're going from 29.7 billion to 34.09 all funds. Just in this last, just to go from 16 to 19. You know, where is that growth happening? And what are we going to do to get a handle on that? What are we going to do when the economy goes down? We can't just project into the future escalating costs of this magnitude. You know, forever, that $34 billion in all funds is what we're going to do this time. So that's I really think, the counter-argument, Representative Liebling, is if we can't pull out costs, what are we going to do?
Well, Representative Liebling, I know you had another question.
Yeah.
I just had wanted to get a word in before you went on to the next subject. So anyway, Representative
Right.
Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, I'm not saying we shouldn't try to get our hands around costs. I think I've said numerous times we need to, and I've got some additional ways that you didn't seem to want to do. But you just can't book, you can't make up the savings. I mean, am I correct? I've got another question I want to get to, but I'm assuming there is no fiscal note for either of these two lines, either of these two items, I should say, the $170 million for the income verification / MA audit activities, and then the $50 million for the competitive bidding reform. I don't believe there are any fiscal notes for that. So great if it can save money. I'm not saying we shouldn't do those things. I'm just saying we can't book the savings and then spend the money in the bill because it just isn't real money. But the other question I wanted to ask you is, you have savings on line 787 of the spreadsheet for a cut to DHS technology and operations for MinSure. And this is a $40 million savings over the biennium. And what I understand this to be, I think we had quite some discussion about this in the last budget cycle, about whether there actually was anything budgeted for technology. This is, I believe, the technology system that we call, now we're calling METS, Minnesota Eligibility Technology System. This is for the technology piece that when somebody goes to MinSure and they get sent to the public program side, that there's this is between, you know, helping to get them all the way through the eligibility, which is a state thing, not a Minshew thing. This is the state piece of determining eligibility. The stuff that interfaces with the counties, maybe even some of what funds the counties. I'm not really sure about that. Maybe we could get some more information. But I'd like to know, Representative Dean, when you count this savings, this $40 million, how you expect people's eligibility to be determined. Or maybe this is something else that you're getting this savings from. But I'd certainly like to hear the explanation for it.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, this the budget for Minshew technology, this actually reflects what we were told in committee in the last year about what their needs would be for technology build-out and for their needs going forward. We had in our last bill a requested appropriation from Minshew that we did not pass. They have, through their interagency agreements, baked this into their forecast, and I believe inappropriately so. They have relied upon federal societal funds to build out their IT. They have increased their reliance on DHS for their operations through billing DHS for public enrollees. Inappropriately so, I believe, and this reflects the fact that they should have this thing built out by now and that they cannot continue to grow their IT development beyond the point at which it's supposed to be done. So we can't just continue to bail out Minshew because they haven't finished their IT yet to continue what we've seen over the last couple of years, which is we're almost done.
So,
Representative Liebling.
So, Mr. Chair, and I don't want to beat this into the ground, but this one has a fiscal note, I assume, because this is a specific number. And I think that it is not true that this is, I think this is a DHS responsibility. This is not something that Minshew is doing. This is the DHS money. Otherwise, we couldn't even get a savings from it. This is maybe it would be a good thing for DHS to come down and explain what exactly that money is used for, because this is important. If we think that we're going to save money by tightening up eligibility for our programs, and then we cut the money that is helping us get in place a system of doing our eligibility determinations, it seems like we're just going in two different directions. And so that would be, I think, a pretty important thing for this committee to understand. There's somebody here who can explain it to us, exactly what is in that line.
I'll recognize you, sir, and I know I've got other questions that may be more efficient to ask questions and have someone come down later, but why don't you state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Chuck Johnson. I serve as Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Human Services. In response to Representative Liebling's question, the $20 million is kind of three pieces to what those dollars are used for. $8 million of it is for technology support. That supports the MET system for the public program enrollee part of what that system does, which is eligibility for medical assistance and Minnesota Care. And it's actually not money to improve the system. That is just the money to keep the system operating as it is now. That's based on the budget that Minute Services gave us for what it costs to keep that system running. So without these dollars, we won't be able to support that system, and that will put us in a very difficult position as to how we are able to maintain automated eligibility for MA and Minnesota Care and the support that the counties need from that system in order to carry out their duties around medical assistance. A little under $9 million in this, I think $8.8 million or so, is for Minshew business operations that support public program enrollees. So that is cost allocated expenses for Minshew to account for the responsibilities they have that relate to public program enrollees, such as taking calls from our enrollees, managing mixed household cases, other kinds of undertakings that they have, the community outreach grants that they fund that help a lot of public program enrollees and so forth. And then about $3 million are grants that go to navigators who are providing support to people who are applying for medical assistance in Minnesota Care.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about there's a change in definition, and they add a credible allegation of fraud instead of a conviction for fraud, which causes me to believe that you're doing some things to try to recapture money here based on folks who are committing fraud. So I actually.
Is your question to Mr. Johnson or Representative Dean?
Whoever can answer it, Mr. Chair. How about I get there? So I prosecute folks who financially exploit vulnerable adults and people who have defrauded the welfare system. So I've actually done some welfare fraud cases. If you have allegations that people are not eligible for a program, which is where you're booking all your savings from, do you actually fund the investigators to go out and investigate the fraud to capture the money that you're doing here? Or do you just assume that you're cutting people off from eligibility and so you're going to have savings because there's no ongoing payments to them?
Representative Dean.
That would be the latter.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there's no new investigators in this bill to actually recoup money that has illegally been paid out by people who have been committing fraud.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hillstrom. Not beyond the current investigations that are currently within the department, also with their ability to contract out with other agencies and private entities to do that work, and that can be paid for in a variety of ways.
Mr. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so would the current investigators for fraud be cut by Representative Anderson's bill? Are they also exempted? Because if you're going to recapture money and stop fraud from occurring, you have to pay the people who actually find it.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I do not know the classification levels of those folks. I would be able to tell you that there is flexibility within the agencies to do that and also to contract those services out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we heard in the higher ed bill that the GOP caucus trusts the department to make a determination about those that are committing fraud in the higher ed area. Do you trust the agency and DHS to trust them to do what's right when it comes to fraud in the DHS system, or are you more prescriptive in this bill?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I think they do, when they do catch people doing things, they do try to do that, and they're good people. However, I think with the IT system that we've asked them to do with periodic data match, they haven't done it yet. And disenrollment is automatic. So that's an example of IT that is just not engaged and not working, and is not a question of investigators catching people doing fraud.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is no money savings in this bill from catching people who are committing fraud. There's no money savings in the bill from new investigations for fraud.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, I think we've got a lot of savings in the bill, and there some of that is fraud. Some of it is people that have moved out of the state. Some of it is people who are dead. We just don't want to pay for their health care anymore.
Mr. Johnson, thank you. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the provision in the bill that deals with Medicaid eligibility is a provision that I brought to the committee, and it's in its third generation now. Members, you'll remember 2 years ago, we came and emulated a an approach that the states of Illinois and Pennsylvania took with their similar situations where they had eligibility, fraud, waste, abuse going on by the department and between the interactions of the department and the recipients who weren't qualified for them somewhere along the line at one end or the other of that or both. People were getting signed up for the programs that weren't eligible. The same thing's happening here. The legislative auditor has documented this for 8 or 10 years with numerous reports over time. The agency has not responded. I gave a very impassioned plea on the House floor 2 years ago about this. We had it in the bill. In Illinois, Mr. Chair and members, they booked and saved $300 million. And we did have a fiscal note 2 years ago, you're right, Mr. Chair, and it was north of $100 million for the biennium that we're in now. Had it been enacted in the law with that approach, it was $120 or $130 million, somewhere in there. We had that. We put another provision in, or attempted to put another provision in the spending bill last session, which Representative Liebling was talking about, a modified version of what we worked on in 2015, and that was not adopted into law because of lack of support, if you will, by the governor and others in that in the Senate in that negotiation. That did not get adopted either. So that leaves us where we're at. We've got a provision in the bill now that that brings the legislative auditor to have some additional specialized staff who will be specialized auditors within the Department of Human Services. And we then direct the Department of Human Services to go forward and implement the recommendations of the legislative auditor after he and his staff recognize the people who are not on the programs legally. And so that's the approach we're taking, members. And I just would offer to, you know, and Representative Liebling, you've said on the House floor, you said in committee here a few weeks ago that you supported the idea of closing these very gaping holes of problems we have here. The agency has not seemingly has not wanted to do this. Again and again and again, the reports kept coming back year after year from the legislative auditor, government, you're not doing your job here. And now in the last 3 years, now we've had successive attempts at this, and as Chair Dean pointed out, the agency still didn't even do the data matching stuff that was agreed upon last time. There's a reluctance by the government to do, apparently they can give the money out. They do a good job at that, but they don't do a good job of making certain that people who are getting the money are eligible for it. And so what we're doing here, members, the legislative auditor and his efforts used the same type of approaches that I assume they use in other states and actually checked to see if people made the amount of money that they said they made and checked the Department of Revenue and or the IRS and checked that data, checked to see if they were actually alive, checked to see if they lived where they were living, checked to see if they had the number of people in their family they said they had, checked to see if they were legal citizens or permanent residents or whatever the requirements were in terms of citizenship status. All of those were checked, and that's the effort that the department is not doing. Following state and federal law that is required of them, they have not been following the law. So, Representative Chair Dean, you're on a very good approach here. What should the number be? I think the $170 million is conservative. Just now, within the last several months, the department actually did some shorter version of a report, and even according to their number, 16% of people are still not eligible for the programs that they're paying out the money in. And I would expect their number to be a small one compared to that of legislative auditor. Again, the legislative auditor came back from his audit of January through May of 2015, just a portion of the year, and as Chair Dean mentioned, only 40% of the caseload during that time period. and between $115 million and $271 million was being wasted. Blown out the tailpipe, I like to say, onto the roadway and into the ditch. Spent on people who weren't qualified to receive it. And so, is the number 170,000, is 120 or 30,000 like it was in the fiscal note a couple of years ago, or is it 200,000, or excuse me, million?
Million.
Or is it 200 million? Is it 100 million? Is it 300 million? Is it 400 million? I don't think we know, but I think Chair Dean has tied some performance measures to that number in here, and I don't know exactly how he came up with the numbers, but I think we have to book some savings and then hold the department accountable to those numbers, and the architecture of this bill does that. So thank you for your bill and your efforts, Chairman Dean, in actually bringing the government to follow the law.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I want to ask Representative Dean about probably the number one issue that I've heard about, and I can't imagine other members of the committee haven't as well. And that's the problem that we've encountered with the direct care workers and meetings that I've had both in my district and here at the Capitol. A lot of concern about being able to hire workers, retention of workers. I looked through the spreadsheet and it doesn't appear to me that that's addressed anywhere in the bill. And so if you could comment on what your thoughts are on resolving that very real problem. And I have a feeling I'm speaking for members on both sides of the aisle on that one, because it's a big, big issue. And part of it is the bounce back of our economy, where, you know, they're not the easiest jobs, and people now have other alternatives for better salaries and so on in other sectors of the economy. And so, therefore, the problem.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, in the last term we addressed our skilled nursing care facilities with really generational reform to try to get more dollars and benefits to our nursing homes, and I think that that has been very, very successful. In this term, we are looking at, what about the folks who deliver care in the community? It's called home and community-based services, or waivered services for people who get the care delivered in the community, which is a growing portion of the Medicaid budget. It's over 25%, and it is growing. So in 10 years, it's going to be an even bigger portion, because people want to get care in their home or in their community, and that's a good thing, and it can be delivered at less cost. That is an area that we would like to spend more money on. It's a very expensive COLA to increase. It's one that I personally wanted to increase in the past. You know, Representative Hamilton has carried legislation on that and has been a champion for people who deliver services in the home. One of the things that we are currently looking at is the within the current budget are there is an increase that will take place in the upcoming years for people who receive home and community-based services by direct care providers, PCAs, and others, that the governor is going to remove from the forecast. We would like to keep that in place and change that determination, that we'll see an increase of around 7% in the next 4 years. We want to actually increase on that. It's not included in this bill, but we do differ with the governor on that interpretation, and we would want to have that increase remain in the forecast. So that's a point of difference between the governor's budget and our budget. It's one that we saw bills move forward to add a COLA onto that right now. I think that point of contention is a very big one. It's one that I found out about during the course of this legislative session, and it's one that changed my opinion of how we should go moving forward, whether or not that increase is sufficient, or whether the differences with the governor need to get ironed out. So that's a big deal. It's a very expensive deal. It's one that we need to tackle. But I think that currently the governor's interpretation of that is the wrong path and that we ought not to go that way.
Yeah, Mr. Representative Carlson. Chairman, I dealt with the issue when I chaired the Finance Committee and later Ways and Means, and I know it is expensive, but it's an important issue, and it's a vital service to people, and that's why I bring up the question, because I've just heard it from countless people, as I said earlier. Mr. Chairman, I, from my standpoint, you know, I've expressed earlier my concerns about the bill, and I think with this bill and the various shifts and the interest in what may or may not ultimately happen, the way I'm going to put it, I think with this bill we're flying on a wing and a prayer, and I think that's not the way to balance the state budget with one of the largest budgets that we'll be going through, but I'll stop there. I think I'm one individual done for the evening. I did, maybe others want to comment. But a wing and a prayer.
Representative Dean, any final comments?
Sure. I think we will have probably an honest difference of opinion about if and how we can recover some of the savings. But just all funds, in state funds, we're going from $11.7 billion to $14.3 billion. And we're saying that our agencies cannot find out where we're wasting money because they can't do it, and we can't ask them to do it. But middle-class Minnesota is trying to figure out where their next premium is going to come from. Their $2,000, $3,000 a month premium that they're going to have to borrow to get. And Representative Fabian's constituents, who if they can get a choice of one policy, now have to travel hundreds of miles to get care past the hospital and the clinics that they used to go to, that middle-class Minnesota has had to pay more to get less, and it's time that the state government start becoming more efficient about this, and I think it's high time that we start. I don't think it's too much to ask the agencies to have just a little bit of sacrifice and do a little bit of work to try to get these savings. And I will say that the bill itself prioritizes people in most need, children and people who are in the dawn and the shadows and the dusk of life that we have always done a good job of providing care for. That's what this bill does, and I look forward to working with the Senate and members of any party and all the stakeholders as we start the next step in the process. So I look forward to your support.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor, Representative Dean renews his motion that Senate File 800 as amended be referred to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. Senate File 800 as amended is referred to the General Register. And members, I don't know if we're going to have any further meetings this week or not. I thought at one point we maybe would. I know there's just a lot of demand for additional meetings, but I'll let you know. With that, we're adjourned.